and Dee ran us through the presentation and also the motions, but we didn't have anything on the board, so I'll turn to the chair of the committee. Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Deirdre went over, there are three bundles of committee motions relating to capacity. The first one that we'll go over is related to the fishing power adjustments. And the committee on September 1st had two motions related to these provisions in the amendment. So I would move on behalf of the committee that Amendment 15 alternatives be modified to expand the range for the second fishing power adjustment for the public hearing document to 5% to 11% for consideration. The value of this second adjustment could be modified by framework to an amount outside the initial percentage considered. This motion passed the committee by a vote of 8-0 with zero abstentions. The second in the bundle is that the fishing power adjustment factors, and this could include both adjustments, should be reconsidered in the future and possibly adjusted if input controls are adjusted in future actions. This passed by a vote of 6-0 with two abstentions.
Committee motion, discussion on the committee motion. Sally.
So as Deirdre went over before the break, the PDT did quite a bit of work on this. The advisory panel considered it as well. The range that the PDT recommended to the committee was an adjustment of between 7 to 11%. This is in addition to, actually we're kind of making a transition in the language. The first adjustment is really a fishing power adjustment. The second is additional mortality adjustments, and that's what this applies to. The committee deliberated and decided to expand the range to for consideration in the public hearing document to go beyond what the PDT recommended to include 5 to 11%, so a slightly larger range, and going to the lower end as well. We had quite a bit of committee and advisory panel discussion on this, which resulted in part in the second part of this motion, making clear that as management may change, especially in light of ACLs coming into place, that if additional input controls were established, that this adjustment may need to be changed in response to changing management measures.
So we had a PDT recommendation of 7 to 11%, and the committee wanted to go to 5%.
Right, to expand the range, and that was based on input that we received from both the advisory panel and then the public during the discussion.
Okay. All right, Beth.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to speak to that, the analysis that was done indicated that the more days you put on a vessel, the more efficient the vessel becomes. And I think intuitively many people in the industry felt that the fewer days that you fish, the more efficient you need to be with those days. So, you know, there were a lot of questions that were raised, but clearly the analysis showed that the vessels, if you look back, became more efficient. What's difficult to sort of tease out of that is what the changing management measures over time impacted that. So because, you know, clearly there are a lot of questions about this percentage and what it really means, and not wanting to create disincentives for people to consolidate at the same time, we felt that putting it in there, but also realizing that it probably will be need to analyze looking back as we move forward, that if it needs to go up, it should go up, and if it needs to go down, it could also do that.
Anyone else on the council? Sally.
Yeah, I just further point out that in the amendment document, page 65 and page 66 describe some of the reasons that that there would need to be an adjustment at all. The last of these, you know, as Mary Beth pointed out, items 1 through 5 on page 65 and 66 are reasons to consider that you should have a higher adjustment rate because efficiency would increase. But number 6, as you can see, that there's also a discussion about how LPUE could decline due to stacking. So while certainly the discussion really did favor the side of considering the need for the adjustment to make sure that you're not increasing effort, that there were two sides of this coin.
Right. I mean, I would assume that if this program were to move forward, the individual with the multiple vessels would make that decision for themselves whether or not it made sense. Anyone else in the council? Rick?
John, just to this question, we did have a lot of discussion in the committee about this issue. This issue accounts for a number of basically unknowns that might come into play if stacking goes forward. And frankly, the idea of having a range and making it having a slightly lower bound to it, related to the fact that part of what's being accounted for here in the analysis by the PDT is that there would be an increase in LPUE based on vessel owners that had stacked platforms being better able to manage their allocated days. That is, they would have some sort of productivity play because they would be able to better manage and limit their steaming days as a percentage of their total allocated days. But that would basically require, among other things, increasing trip lengths. And the fleet owners I spoke with did not indicate that they would expect to increase trip lengths in response to having a stacked set of permits on a vessel. So there seemed to be some question in the industry, at least, as to whether or not there really would be a significant productivity play. And so in the discussion at the committee, we suggested having a slightly lower bound on it. But, of course, at the end of the day, there would be analysis and public comment on any of these options, but the council would end up selecting a fixed value for that within the range.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. I'll turn to staff for a second. I'm in document 9A. On page 40 and 41, is that the, I guess it starts at the bottom of 39, is that the extent of the analysis on this issue right now?
No, actually, that's just the beginning of it. That's a description of the factors that we believe go into the reason that you need a second mortality adjustment. The pages that go on for quite a bit after that get into the different tables and scenarios that we've run and trying to show you in examples, probably for the next 20 pages or so, examples of some of the things Rick was just describing in terms of fishing behavior adjustments that could increase efficiency. The one that probably drives it a lot is the year that a vessel was built, which is not something that we capture in this model, but if you have a vessel that's exactly the same as another vessel that's 30 years older, that in itself, just that it's a newer vessel, is so much more efficient when we looked at the data, even though the vessels are exactly the same. And year built, for example, is one of the sections in here that describes the potential increases in catch, but from just that factor alone. So when you start to put all those things together, the analysis is actually quite lengthy, describing all of those different things. The reason I raised my hand before was to clarify the discussion of this at the advisory panel level was actually to support the PDT's original recommendation, but that motion failed. And the reason the motion failed is because people actually thought that the range should be wider, whether or not in both directions, but definitely wider in the upper bound. And they didn't come up with a value to present to the council. But the reason it failed was not because they thought it was, you know, a bad range or something, but just that they felt that it should actually go higher if it's going to be extended.
So the AP supported the 7% as the lower value and wanted a higher value than 11?
Well, technically, you know, the motion failed. They had a 7 to 11 as a motion, but it failed. The reason in the record that it did fail is because they wanted the bound higher. 7 to something higher. They never went and made a second motion about it, but that was clarified as the reason that the motion failed. You know, they're not as familiar with the process. What probably should have happened is someone should have then probably made a motion with different ranges, but I don't know if they felt that they could really identify what that upper bound would be, or that they could, if you know what I mean. There may be some advisors in the audience that want to add to the discussion, but that was kind of voiced as the reason that it failed among the advisory panel.
Okay. And I think my reason for questioning this is because I've received a lot of comment from people in the public on this particular issue. And I want to make sure that our record and our analysis is clear and that the council members are clear on the development of this motion. Anyone else in the council? We'll go to the audience. Steve.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. Stephen Ouellette, representing independent scallop runners. Obviously, the independents and the owners that I represent, it's 51 owners who 37 are individual boat owners, 14 own between 2 and 5 boats, who are not interested in any of these consolidation or leasing proposals. One of their primary concerns is the effect that leasing or stacking will have on open area days, and open area days being both open area days currently allocated annually and also some of the days that are being allocated to offset for some of the access area trips that can't be taken. The concern, particularly in light of the ACLs and the AAMs, is that if, as has happened in prior years, most prior years, effort outside of the access areas results in exceeding expected catches, it's going to trigger ACLs and AMs. And now, in the face of just trying to work those out, you're adding a whole new level of management uncertainty by what the effect of allowing people to stack and lease will be. I know it's different than the groundfish fishery, but for those of you who are here for Amendment 13, my understanding is that the addition of the leasing program to groundfish resulted in an across-the-board 5% reduction in days at sea. And the concern is that as some parties are seeking to make themselves more efficient, and we'll get into whether it's capacity reduction at all, this is about efficiency. This is about making vessels more efficient, moving permits and days to more efficient vessels, making larger businesses more economically efficient. There is a real potential for the cost of that caused by increased effort to fall on those parties who don't consolidate. In the groundfish fishery, it forced consolidation. If you didn't consolidate, you found that your days were being depreciated because they were being burned at a faster rate. So to look at a 5 to 11% fishing power adjustment, which was, that's kind of the median number picked by the PDT. In point of fact, I'm sorry, the 7 to 11 was the median. In point of fact, the PDT document, just based on consolidation of days at sea through leasing, indicated that the efficiency on those days, or the overall efficiency of an operation, could be increased by as much as 25%. And if you take into account the fact that those days are moving to more efficient vessels, whether they're larger or not, owners are going to shift days to their more efficient captains. The net effect is that yes, they're going to get a great benefit and catch more and faster outside, and then the fleet is going to be asked to take an across the board cut. So we encourage you to pick the highest numbers as the range to go out to public comment. Otherwise, you're sending a message that, yeah, we fully expect that non-consolidating vessels are going to pay a cost for this, which they should not bear. Thank you.
Anyone else? Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. As most of you probably know, I had 32 years' experience in this fishery, and if there's a way to improve your efficiency, it will happen. And unfortunately, I think this is one situation where you're actually encouraging and abetting it. As David Ouellette just, Stephen Ouellette just said that the adjustment range that you have here is probably woefully inadequate at this time, particularly in light of what is likely to occur if you are wrong and it needs adjustment. Those who choose not to participate in this are unable to. And in many cases, you know, they may be choosing to because they are unable to. You're going to end up with a situation similar to what you have with sectors right now. People scared to death that they're not going to survive because the pack mentality is going to overtake them. If the efficiency, and I have to laugh at that word in a way because Rodney will remember some years back we had a meeting in Washington where Andy Rosenberg said efficiency is a bad word. It's not something to strive for. And at that time and place, I argued against that. I said it didn't always have to be bad, but I can assure you in this case here that it likely will be. Once again, it'll come back in the form of adjustments and reducing fishing power across the board. If the council does choose to go through this and recommend this and take this off the public hearing, perhaps you need an option in there to keep these two groups separate, just like you have with general category. You have a division or a subgroup for vessels that are consolidated and base their efficiency or their days at sea on their efficiency, and do the same for the boats who choose or are unable to do so, and let them live as they have chosen or as they will. I mentioned the other day that one of the problems with this is these are oftentimes basically business decisions that you are making for an industry and for a group of people who have chosen a way of life that will no longer be able to exist if this turns into corporate fishing. And when you start abetting management regulations like this, then there is no other true direction for that fishery. Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, council members. My name is Jeffrey Pike. I represent the Sculp Capacity Reduction Coalition, a group of sea sculp vessel owners who collectively own approximately 100 limited access permits. Our coalition was formed for the single purpose of addressing capacity reduction in the sea sculp fishery, so my comments are confined to that and the motion. Let me say that the coalition strongly supports the inclusion of stacking leasing option in Amendment 15 as a preferred alternative and requests that the council so designate in the public hearing document. A short recap of the history is important to this debate. Back in 2007, a number of our members sought to address excess capacity through the sector process. The Garden State scallop sector and other sector proponents sought to have limited access sectors authorized in Amendment 11. They were not. We were told we'd have to wait. At the start of Amendment 15 in January 2008, the Council correctly identified capacity reduction as one of the three primary issues to be addressed. Several options to accomplish this goal were scoped, including ITQs, IFQs, sectors, cooperatives, and the like. But ultimately, they were all rejected. Today, stacking and leasing remain the only measures included in Amendment 15 to address capacity reduction. As you stated accurately at the beginning of this process, there is excess capacity in the sea scallop fishery. Our boats are capable of catching a heck of a lot more scallops than they do. They fish 80 days out of the year, and for 285 days, they sit at the dock. The 2008 report to Congress by the National Marine Fisheries Service identified this fishery as having the highest overcapacity of any fishery in the country. Permit stacking is not a new concept. The North Pacific Council authorized it in the sable fishery, where you can stack three permits on one vessel. In New Jersey, in the clam fishery, they allow you to stack three licenses on one boat. And here in New England, our largest groundfish fishery, we transfer and stack permits. From the beginning, we've advocated for an effective stacking and leasing program that allows vessel owners to eliminate steel while at the same time not disadvantaging others. We've consistently, and I emphasize consistently, supported a conservation-neutral approach. The council staff, the PDT, deserve a great deal of credit for their work in this area. Based on DeMet's efforts and work, the document now includes what's known as a power adjustment and a mortality adjustment to ensure that the stacking and leasing are conservation neutral. What's more is the committee has proposed that the mortality adjustment be frameworkable so that can be adjusted in the future. Obviously, stacking and leasing are most applicable to multi-vessel owners, those who seek to increase fishing opportunity and those who seek to increase fishing opportunity without purchasing another vessel. So it should be no surprise that the majority of our members fall in this category. They are the ones that are paying most for the excess capacity today, and they are the ones with multiple vessels tied to the dock for three quarters of a year. Regrettably, over the last 18 months, members of our coalition have been subject to unfair, unfounded, and quite frankly, rude public criticism as a way to detract from the real issues. We've been called greedy, our motives have been challenged, and some believe we only seek to put individual vessel owners out of business. Nothing could be further than truth. If these accusations were true, our members would want to stack more than two permits. They would oppose a power adjustment. They'd oppose a mortality adjustment. They'd oppose the application of 5% ownership restriction to leasing. And they'd not advocate for a conservation-neutral approach. I hope you can understand that. One specific example that's continually used to challenge our motives is that of a small 500-horsepower permit boat that will be stacked on a 1,500-horsepower boat to increase catch in the open areas. This is a red herring. We've carefully analyzed that precise situation, and if a little common sense is used, you'll understand that just wouldn't happen because the owner would lose 30% of the days at sea assigned to that small boat that is already making profit, according to others. Using the 51 days in DeMet's analysis for the power adjustment, that 51 days when it's stacked would be discounted 28.6%. For the power adjustment, they would stack 36.4 days, not the original 51, on the larger boat. But then you have the mortality adjustment of 9%. The stacked vessel would only receive 34.6 days, overall a reduction of 16.4 days, significantly more than the length of one regular open trip. The cost of that adjustment would be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and possibly $250,000, depending on the average price of scallops. No vessel owner in their right mind would forfeit so much just to get rid of a 500-horse boat. In reality, stacking and leasing is going to occur among similar-sized vessels to avoid the power adjustment. Remember, if you stack or lease days at sea between two identical vessels, exactly the same, the owner still must forfeit a percentage of the days at sea because of the mortality adjustment. An effective capacity reduction program based on stacking and leasing must be attractive to vessel owners if it's to be successful. And I think you've seen those who have opposed us and have argued for higher taxes and higher adjustments are the same people that oppose stacking and leasing. They would like to make it so unattractive that no vessel owner will take advantage of it. And we understand that. But we believe that the measures contained in Amendment 15 include all the necessary components, so long as a few critical issues, such as a mortality adjustment, don't create disincentives. In addition to reducing the fleet size, an effective capacity reduction will provide other benefits, such as creating new opportunities for single vessel owners who may not have the money or desire to purchase an entire boat and permit, but they could lease days or trips. We hope that the entire fleet will be upgraded. Good boats from which permits were stacked will be cycled through the fleet, resulting in the retirement of older vessels and improving overall safety. We'll reduce port congestion, and hopefully we'll soften the impacts of derby fishing in closed areas due to the reduction in the number of vessels. And for the first time ever, these proposals will provide vessel owners an opportunity to receive income from lease trips or days in sea, God forbid, in the event of a catastrophic incident. Today, if one vessel's boat is burned or sinks, there is no way to derive revenue or income from your permit. So this proposal would allow you to do that. Finally, a capacity reduction program now through stacking and leasing will foster healthy businesses, and we are proud of that. We're creating more opportunities for single vessel owners at no cost to the government. Remember, we have 251 full-time dredge permits. 80% of those are owned by multi-vessel owners. Under the proposal, as is evidenced in your document, days at sea usage will be reduced from between 7 and 11%, meaning less bottom time, less bycatch, fewer boats in the Derby in the access areas. Landings will remain stable, as is evidenced by the tables that the Met has included in there. And guess what? Net crew incomes will increase. From a business perspective, vessel owners will try to make up the cost of stacking and leasing, if they so choose to do that, not by increasing landings or revenues, but by decreasing and reducing costs. We hope you'll keep that in mind, and I hope you'll endorse this as your preferred alternative. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee spent a lot of time listening to the public on this issue, and as you can see, there are very divergent opinions, and people feel quite strongly about it, which led us to the decision that we made, because we feel that there appears to be a need for the extra tax, but there's a lot of uncertainty about what the appropriate tax would be. Another thing that was discussed is the idea of newer vessels being more efficient. And that I think people believe is true, but in general, that would be a policy statement that would apply to every fishery in the region. And creating, initiatives that might actually cause people to not replace vessels doesn't seem to be appropriate. We all know that vessels get old and newer vessels are safer vessels, and placing taxes on people for replacing vessels is probably not a good policy choice. I think that Jeff spoke to many concerns, and we've heard both sides of this issue at length at the committee level, and I think our motion really speaks to where we landed.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed, abstentions, motion carries 15-0. Sally?
The next bundle of motions related to capacity. There were two from last week and one from a couple weeks ago. The first, these are all related to permit stacking. The first is to allow stacked vessels to carry up to 20 days at sea to the following fishing year. This motion also clarified that no action on this issue would be 10 days at sea per stacked vessel carryover. So there are two options in the document, one where there would be 20 days allowed to carry over, one where there would be 10 days allowed. That motion passed by a vote of 4-2-1. Second was to include an alternative that if a trawl permit converts to dredge through its annual declaration and stacks with another dredge permit, that it's not allowed to convert back to a trawl permit and fish both permits with trawl gear. That passed by a vote of 8-0-0. The intent there is that once a trawl permit stacks with a dredge permit, it can't go back to being a trawl permit.
Committee motion, discussion from the council. Terry Stockwell.
Just a quick question, Sally. in the second alternative, that's a permanent measure that you can't convert back to a draw vessel.
That's right. My recollection is that if you then de-stack, you can't go back to trawl.
Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't support this motion, primarily because of motion three. I'm really struggling with this. Originally, the carryover provision was 10 days, approximating at the time a scallop trip, and was primarily designed to avoid a situation where a vessel might have to fish in an unsafe situation because of weather at the very end of the fishing year, someone who might have saved their days. So to allow now it to be 20 days, frankly, just doesn't make any sense given that original reason for the motion. For the measure, rather. And it's not permit specific. So, for example, it seems to appear anyway that an occasional vessel could pretty much carry over their entire allocation and a part-time vessel a good portion of their allocation. And I think its carryover could significantly impact on the ability to achieve fishing mortality targets. So I'm not able to support the motion. And if I didn't say at the beginning, I meant to say I know this is just for public hearing purposes, but I still am concerned about occlusion of it.
Dave Gatham.
Yeah, I actually was going to raise the same concerns that Pat did. Mine are just a little bit different in that since the amount of days goes up and down every year based on the resource condition, if people realized that the days for a year were going way down because of poor resource conditions, they could carry over 20 days to fish that year, which would potentially exacerbate a bad resource condition. I just don't see any need for 20 days. So I'm going to make a motion to amend to remove motion three from going out to public hearing.
There's a second. Seconded by Pat Kirkle. Discussion on the motion to amend. Sally McGee.
So to clarify then, if this motion carries, we would have in the document one alternative, that being no action, that would allow a vessel that has stacked permits to carry over 10 days.
That's correct.
Anyone else in the council on the motion to amend? Pat.
Well, actually, to clarify, there would be nothing in the document at that point, so because there would be no alternatives.
Go to the audience. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seaport Consulting. I had a concern about the 20-day carryover. Particularly in light of the fact when they were discussing issues revolving around leasing of days at sea, that the lease days were used up first, so how could you save 10 of those days and then go into your second group? So that would have created a problem if that was to apply in that instance also. But this will not remove, I want to be clear, that this will not remove the 10-day carryover as it currently exists. All right, thank you very much.
Oh, right there. Thank you. The reason for the 20 days is I'm not in favor of it, but I'm kind of opposed to this other issue, which is 3.3.8, where you can't lease 60 days prior to the end of the year. So if you're unfortunate enough to have a catastrophic event towards the end of the fishing year, you can't carry the days over, you can't lease them, you're kind of held to whatever happens.
I'm just looking. Could you give me the section number again, 3.3?
Yeah, it's on page 67.
He has an older version, page 70, actually. Oh, that's okay. From last week, it's changed.
Yeah.
Page 70, section 3.3.3.8. It's actually under leasing, which we're not we're talking about stacking still.
I'm out of context here, but that was the reason for the – maybe one of the reasons for the 20 days. I don't know if there's anything else you could put in to help someone out, that if they do have a big engine failure or a fire or something towards the end of the fishing year, this says that within 60 days of the end of the fishing year, you can't do anything. You would just lose them all. So that was a major concern, or is a concern. Thank you.
So so I'm clear. Is your issue that you can't do anything within 60 days at the end of the year? Is your
right.
issue that
right? If they would change that, then the 10-day carryover is fine.
Okay.
I don't know the reason why we need 60 days at the end of the fishing year that you can't do anything.
Okay.
Or if you could put something in that if a man could prove that he had a real major problem, you can't put an engine in 60 days. And at the day rate now, if you lost 20 days or 10 days, that could be your entire profit for the whole year. So thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Back to the council. We have a motion to amend on the board. Anything further from the council? Sally.
Just to clarify also, and Deirdre might be able to add to this, there was a little bit of discussion that the committee had on, obviously, if you have only 10 days that you can carry over, the management uncertainty is a lot less than if you have 20 days that you have to carry over. So if this motion passes, then your management uncertainty is less. That certainly wasn't quantified, but there's a difference.
I'm inclined to leave it in for now. I think that Ray described a situation that perhaps a combination of measures could alleviate, and this could be one, or perhaps we could have this one with a lot of caveats to it in the future, and I don't think we're going to resolve some of that today. So I'd be inclined to go with a committee motion, and perhaps staff could include some of the concerns that Pat has raised from the agency's perspective in the public hearing document.
Anything further on the motion to amend? Rodney.
Yeah, I just have to get something clarified. Pat says if we remove this, we still have no 10-day carryover?
No, you will have a 10-day carryover.
Oh, you will have the 10. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. Okay.
Anything further? Ready for the question on the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. Twelve. Opposed? Three. Abstentions. Motion to amend carries 12 to 3. Now we're on the main motion as amended. Anything further? Glenn.
Just a question on the trawl permit. What's the reason for not being able to go back to a trawl permit? From anybody that would know?
Sally or Dee?
The general feeling is that the few vessels that have the option right now to convert on an annual basis to dredge, that if they stack and exercise that option to go to a dredge, that they shouldn't be able to go back, wanting to encourage movement in the direction of the more efficient and more selective gear than the trawl gear.
Anything further on the main motion as amended? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 15, unanimous. Sally?
The next motion that we have is also related to stacking. The committee had, over the last couple of months, as we were talking about the options for stacking, the idea of allowing for de-stacking evolved, and so I think there's really just one motion here that is related to that. So I would move on behalf of the committee that Amendment 15 be modified to break out issues of the status of stacked permits and allowance of destacking. Amendment 15 should include two options for destacking, option A, to allow stacking, and option B, to prohibit destacking. This passed by a vote of 7-1.
Committee discussion. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah. I'm a little bit troubled by this idea of destacking. I mean, whether I agree with stacking or not is still also an issue, but, you know, the idea of being proposed here is for the proponents of stacking is to consolidate the number of vessels. Now we're saying the number's going up, it's going down, it's going back, it's going forth. This is an enormous administrative burden. I think it should be one way. You either stack and you stay stacked or, you know, don't stack at all. But I don't think you should be able to go back and forth. So I'd like to hear some other council members' thoughts, and then I may make a motion to strike this entire destacking section.
Anyone else? Sally.
Yeah, just a little further discussion on this. Related to the destacking provisions, the committee did discuss what would happen to both the scallop permits and any other associated permits that would be bundled with the stack permits if destacking were allowed. The committee decided, and in the document, the recommendation is that if destacking is allowed, that the scallop permits would go back to their original value in terms of the fishing power adjustment that might have been applied. That would then be removed. So the scallop permits would go back to their original status. There was also discussion about what happens with any other permits that might come along with stacked scallop permits. Those would obviously, when you stack, there would then only be one set of any other permits that might have been, gone along with that, whether they're monkfish or any other species permits that might be associated there. The committee, there was a failed motion related to stack permits if the stack permits become unstacked, you only get your scallop permit back. You don't get all of the other ones. All those other ones that were stacked do, in fact, consolidate and don't all of a sudden reappear. So I just wanted to add that as just kind of further discussion that the committee had on this issue. As far as
Mm-hmm.